Microphone should ensure. Are we recording, please?
Yes, it's up there. Is it on music on chain?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Sorry there, folks. Okay. Everyone should ensure their mobile telephones are turned off or switched to silent, and the use of mobile devices for recording is not permitted. Members of the public should not speak during the meeting and may be temporarily excluded for discussion of in-committee items. Members of the public and press must refrain from using the instant messaging facility during the meeting, and anyone found to be doing so will be given a warning. Failure to adhere to the guidelines for a second time will result in being removed from the meeting. I'd remind members of their obligations under the Councillor's Code of Conduct to declare any financial or significant non-financial interests which they have in any item of business before the committee today. If you have such an interest, please either declare it now or immediately before the item itself, stating the item of business it relates to. Having declared an interest, members should leave the chamber or hang up from the call for the duration of the discussion on that item and should not take part in the vote. You will then be invited back to join the meeting once the discussion on that item has ended. The proceedings of the meeting will be audio and video recorded, except where Council is considering an exempt matter. The recording equipment is linked to the microphone system on the computer, so please ensure your microphone is switched on before speaking. Members are reminded that they are personally responsible for any comments they make during the meeting. Please ensure if you wish to speak on any item, either in the chamber or via Teams, use the chat facility to indicate your wish to speak, and I will bring members in as listed. I would remind members to keep their instant messages to the following letters. Type Q if you wish to ask a question, or C for a comment. P if you wish to propose, and S if you wish to second. Please refrain from making any other comments using the instant messaging. If you need to leave the meeting early, please indicate via chat facility so that we are aware this is an active decision and does not indicate connectivity problems. Thank you. So item number one then, apologies. Thanks for Selena Murphy. Declarations of interest? None. Okay, we move on to item number three then, is the action sheet of the ERP meeting on Monday the 11th September. Can I have a proposer? Proposed Terry. Nobody seconder. Michael? Any commentary? Go ahead, brief.
I'd just like to ask the officers in relation to page one of the any update on the Ballykilner Hut. I know I spoke at the previous meeting about it, and I'm just wondering what the state of play is at the minute. Thank you, Chair.
By the Chair, yes, there were Council was approached by a number of interested parties, and there was meetings planned with those parties, and the commitment was to bring a report back to ERT once that's concluded to advise members of the next step. So that's still the case.
Thanks very much for the update, and thanks, Chair, for indulging.
Oh, well, thanks, Terry. Okay, nobody else any comment? Seeing anything? So we then move on to item number four, which is the presentation we're going to get from Owen McGuinness, Ulster University, a local government outlook. And Owen's been with us here numerous times over the years, and always very positive news, and I'm sure it's the same tonight. Go ahead, Owen. Yeah, you hit it.
Thank you, Chair. I'm just going to share a few slides here. I think these should have been, or these have been circulated in advance. So I'll maybe take 10 minutes, Chair, if that's okay, just to talk through the slides and then take any questions people might have after that. So I suppose some of the people who'll be here tonight have been on the committee before. Others will be new to the ERT committee, but I work in the Ulster University Economic Policy Centre, and we have an agreement with the Council to provide forecasts and outlooks twice a year to a number of the councils across the north, one of them being Newry, Mourne and Down. In terms of what those normally do is we'd have employment forecasts out to sort of 5 or 10 years, and other forecasts around unemployment, economic inactivity, and then kind of more general growth in gross value added would be the main forecast that we do. This current forecast is based on the most recent economic outlook that we have for Northern Ireland, which was published just before the summer in May. And I suppose the overall by way of introduction, there's two parts, I guess, to the current forecast. One is that we're likely to, touch wood, fingers crossed, avoid recession this year in the north. But we're going to see a period this year and then for the next couple of years of quite low growth. And that's largely influenced by the kind of the inflation, the cost of living crisis that is there, and how that's eaten into people's capacity to spend or money to consume, you know, consumption. And also the interest rates rising, which will eat into, again, eat into kind of consumer spend, but it'll also eat into the ability to borrow and pay down debt and so on and so forth. So that's the kind of the feeling we have. That's going to be, both of those factors are pressing down on the forecast at the moment. That said, we're still expecting under both the baseline and the upper scenario, we have two different scenarios for the council. We're still expecting to see economic growth over the next period in terms of employment growth and GVA growth. So that's just by way of introduction there. Just see. Well, that's the No. It's all laptops. Here, if I set it off again, I feel like I'm in a concert from the 1990s here, you know, sort of thing. Okay. So in terms of the overview, then I mentioned there around avoiding the recession and a kind of a the inflation and interest rates. I suppose two important things really to draw, and as I said, these slides are there for people to have a look at. Two things to draw in mind. We're not expecting, thankfully, any surge in unemployment. So we're not expecting, even with a bit of a downturn or lower growth, we're not expecting something like we saw after the kind of crash in 2008-09, where we saw high unemployment following that. And one of the reasons for that is that the economy over the last while, even after COVID and with the cost of living crisis, has proved a lot more resilient over the last 18 to 24 months than we might have expected. So we're expecting that to continue. One thing you're beginning to see really here is a slowdown then in employee growth. So we're still seeing growth in terms of numbers of new jobs. And one thing I think if anybody who's on the ERT would hear, you know, they're out talking to businesses, it's quite difficult to actually recruit people. So there's vacancies there that are hard to fill. And another sign, I think, of that employment and labour market recovering is that the hours worked by people within the local council area and right across the north are rising back to above pre-COVID levels. So that's always a good sign. Employee jobs is one thing, but actually if the total hours worked across the economy is back to above that baseline in 2019, then we're in a good place in terms of the recovery. One thing, I suppose, just to see, and these, again, some of these charts are things you can look at again. Highlight here really that they, and I mentioned there about recruitment challenges. One of the main reasons for that is the demographic challenge. We're now having the working age population, those between 16 and 64 year olds, that's expected, that's begun to plateau out and is expected to fall over the next decade. So in other words, we'll have less people if we can stand still available for work. So that's going to cause even more pressure, I think, in terms of the labour market. At the same time, we are beginning to see an increase in terms of national insurance registrations and applications by non-UK nationals. So in a sense, we are beginning to see a bit of a pickup in inward migration into the north. So that could be a good thing to try and replace that kind of levelling out of people who are here. One of the other factors, I think, in that, in terms of what we'd want to see, is that there's a huge pool of people there who, for various reasons, often very good reasons, with health, care and responsibilities and so on, find it difficult to get into the labour market. So find a way to activate those people through the likes of the labour market partnerships and so on, I think is going to be a sort of a key challenge over the next while. So I suppose the key thing there is that you are beginning to see less people available in the age group that would be usually working. And I suppose another feature in that is people are tend to stay on longer in education than ever before. higher percentage of people staying on an FE and HE. In many ways, that's a good thing, but it leaves less people at the age of 18 to sort of 22, 23 available for work. So that's another factor in terms of the pressure, if you like, to recruit and fill vacancies. So I mentioned there before, we're going to see low growth. And you can see in this graph here in front of you, basically there's the massive drop there in 2020 in terms of growth that year related to COVID, and then a good recovery in the years after 2021, 2022. But you can see this year we're just about above the baseline there for any growth this year, and it's pretty weak the next 2 years for the factors and the reasons I mentioned earlier on. So out to 2025, we're forecasting growth of between 1% and 2%. Which is in line of other parts of the north, but it's not great all the way around. Employment growth is another thing. We are expecting to see continued growth in employment, and Newry Morne Down has had a pretty much of a kind of a jobs boom over the last 25 years in terms of around about a 30% rise in terms of workplace jobs. Health and retail continue to be the two largest sectors in terms of local, and you can kind of see from this chart, those sectors to the left that are pointing to the left are ones that Newry Morne Down is less of a concentration in than the rest of the north, whereas those going to the right, the likes of construction, agriculture, manufacturing, we tend to have more jobs than is the average across the other local government districts. So that's a kind of a key thing, and when you're trying to identify your key sectors, you're really looking for two things. One, those that have general potential to grow, the likes of ICT, professional services and so on. And when you look at that chart, you can see there's good potential from a low base to grow those in Newry Morne Down and other council areas. And then you're looking to build on those that the council is already strong in. So the likes of construction and manufacturing are probably very obvious ones there. And that structure is of jobs that are based in the council area. So that's not quite the same as what people who live in the council area work in, or actually where they work. If you look at the recent census, we've about 10,500 residents of the council area working outside Newry and Morne. Probably about a third of those crossing the border every day to work. So you're kind of looking at a good number of people commuting outside the council area. That said, we also have people commuting into the council area to work in some of the workplaces there too. So employment forecasts, we're expecting to see a good raise, about a 6% raise, up to nearly 80,000 people in work in the council, in workplaces in the council by 2033 in a 10-year period. That could grow even more. And there's an upper scenario there as well of around about 82,000, which would be an additional 2,500 jobs than the baseline one gives you. And our kind of view of why that might happen would be that if you get a right boost from the likes of the City Deal investments, and indeed even the Windsor framework, you know, and a kind of boost from that in terms of the trade deals that are the opportunity to trade within the EU. And probably the third thing in that is the opportunities that definitely are there for the council area within the broader Dublin-Belfast economic corridor. So a combination of those three things could take you from good strong growth of around about 6% in employment to another 2,500 on top of that, all things being well. And I suppose key to that would be continuing to make the council a place that people want to come live and work in as part of that kind of more broad strategy that's there. So council is plenty. The council area, if you'd been speaking to this 20 years ago, you'd have been looking at a very different situation in terms of unemployment numbers there. The unemployment now is still is the third highest you see there within the challenges. But the rate of unemployment within the council area is around about a tenth of what it was, even going back to just post-crash. There's other challenges there around affordability of house prices, the housing, social housing waiting list. Some of these are things that the council are out with the council's power more around advocacy. But there's good growth prospects in terms of the strengths there. And as I say, I mean, one thing that I would point out there is the percentage of the North's total employment that's based in the council now is well up by a couple of, is up by a couple of percent on what it was 10 years ago. So that's a sign of, you know, how the employment growth has been. Considerations then, I suppose the last thing, given that, given what I said around inflation and interest rates, the prospect of a recession, as I say, there is much less likely, I should say, than it appeared at the start of the year even. But this year is going to be a tough year. There'll be very little growth in the local economy, very little GVA growth. Will be some employment growth, but not too much in terms of the broader kind of economic growth that you would see. And there's likely to be budgetary pressures that you're already seeing. Those are likely to continue. We have seen a bit of an uptick in terms of the announcement of job losses across the North, not so much here at the local council level, but there has been some. We may see more as the year goes on. And there are higher numbers, but marginally only, thankfully, higher numbers of people unemployed or claiming universal credit. So we are seeing some signs of pressure there, and we'll see those this year. And the cost of living crisis will continue in 2023. That's probably longer than a lot of people expected. I think a lot of people really expected to see it ease by now, and certainly the government were claiming it would. But there's also that borrowing payments issue for some as well, as one to watch out for. So those are both kind of dampening short-term effects, and hopefully short-term effects. In the medium term then, I suppose, as I mentioned there, there's the rolling out of the Belfast City Region Growth Deal, and the kind of the targeting of key sectors within that. And then probably the last point is one I think that's a medium to long term, needs to be right at the forefront of our minds, and that is a vibrant local labour market. We have good participation, but not great participation among people with caring responsibilities. Largely, I think, due to kind of childcare difficulties there, and availability and cost of that. There's also issues there for employment rates for those with disability, or for those older workers who have taken early retirement, often kind of enforced. And I suppose the key thing really around the labour market is just how much that's going to change over the next 10 years. So the need to upskill, the need for the likes of SRC and SERC to have the resources to be able to work with businesses on that, I think it's going to be absolutely crucial really over the next while. If I'm back to see you in 10 years time, I think you'd be looking at a very different labour market than you are today in terms of the types of jobs that are there and the types of way that people are working. So getting people able to kind of keep up with that, particularly those for us who are kind of in maybe the second half of our working life, I think it's going to be a key element to the success as we go along. So leave it at that.
Yeah, thank you, Owen. Councillor Savage, you have a comment and a question.
Yeah. Owen, thanks very much. As usual, a very definitive presentation that, again, Pete paints a very strong economic picture against what can be a difficult backdrop at the moment with so many challenges. Just looking at some of the elements of it, one of the best graphics you have there are those areas where we're dependent and not so dependent on jobs, and I think that really is a key challenge for ourselves. We've always been very good at underpinning and supporting those jobs within the sectors that have been traditional to this area, should it have been pharmaceuticals, joinery, the digital finance sector, those big employers that have been indigenous employers here, and we've worked hard to support those. But where are the opportunities there, and what are the challenges for us? What should we be doing as a council to try and look to what effectively are those jobs and those sectors to the left of the graph as such, and how should we be looking within our own strategy to try and attract those jobs in? And does the Belfast Regional City deal provide that opportunity to do that, particularly with a Grade A office space? The other element relates to where we've 30-odd percent of our current workforce within the retail and the health sector, and the retail sector has always spoke for itself, particularly in the Greater Newry area. But how dependent are we on sustaining those jobs within our two local hospitals here? And, you know, do you see that, you know, the potential reconfiguration of health and the changes that are there, do you see those as being a challenge that we need to meet and try and come up with a strategy to counter that, so that we don't lose any of those jobs, because any closure or downgrading of a hospital within an area means either migration of those jobs to another district or the loss of those jobs, and those are all pay packets that feed our local economy here. And the last thing really was, how important do you see the development of both the SRC and the SERC in our future development of developing a workforce for the future? You talked about in 10 years' time, the type of jobs that are available. You know, are we doing enough? As a more collaboration of council could be doing with the two further educational colleges, and maybe because of the great proximity we have to DKIT and the technologies offering that's there, could more partnerships be developed there, and could we tie in with both Louth County Council and the two regional colleges and DKIT to develop that further? So it's just really those three areas which spring to mind. But thanks very much for an excellent presentation, and it's great to sort of see in front of us what the next decade looks like, and if we played well, if we played the way we should be playing it, it looks rosy. Thank you.
I'll go ahead on and answer them.
Thanks, Chair. So I just answer them in the order they came. In terms of the kind of concentration in certain areas and how we might sustain, not only sustain that, but kind of grow some of the areas we're less concentrated on. I suppose the first thing to say is that these structures, these sector structures, change over a long period of time. I mean, it's fair to say, and they're kind of fairly broad sectors, I think, that we're presenting there. But even with that said, I think where I'm kind of always surprised at is the lower than average level of ICT within employment within the council area, given the kind of the local position here of like technology firms like StatSports and FD, to name but two, and there are others, but those are probably the two that come to mind. And I think one of the things there in terms of that is that we probably need to think a little bit into some of those. They're big employers, but there's a lot of kind of smaller employers that can go off the back of that. So it's looking at what's likely to come down the track over the next 5-10 years in terms of new startups, and is there opportunities within the kind of the Belfast City Region deal, or indeed even the kind of broader Dublin Belfast economic corridor there, to kind of get startups going in some of those kind of key technology sectors, be it, AI based or whatever it might be. And then I think the big challenge for us locally is sort of moving those to scale, so that some of those startups don't have to go to Belfast or Dublin to kind of find the local workforce. And that probably takes you on to your kind of third question there around the SRC and SERC role. My view on it, is that as it currently stands, it's hard to kind of find a couple of regional colleges or FE colleges that are doing their jobs better than them in terms of, and I think in particularly in terms of that area of upskilling people who are already in work and the kind of short courses, micro credits that are being offered there. I think the difficulty in terms of the partnership there is that local firms probably need to do more and need to be kind of be thinking a little bit more about how to put their staff through some of those kind of upskilling work. Much of the work, I suppose, that we're often doing is for bringing people into work, but it's actually about upskilling the people who are currently in employment, because I think that's where the real challenge is, and that's probably where the SRC and the SERC come into their own in terms of that. There's quite a bit to be learned. You mentioned Dundalk Institute of Technology, quite a bit to be learned from how they've gone about that type of work, I think, and maybe more cooperation there in terms of that kind of what's called now micro accreditation. So it's short courses done for 6-12 weeks, some block release within that, and then there is a kind of a accreditation at the end of that. So I think something along those lines, I think, and given that power to the two colleges to offer that. The other point you made there around the concentration in health, that's, I think one of the things is when you start to look at what is included in sort of health as a sector in terms of employment now, you'd be surprised to kind of see, and this is not to say that the hospitals aren't important, but the actual percentage of overall health-related and healthcare and social care-related employment that's in actually in the hospitals and not in other settings, be it kind of GP settings or social care or some of the kind of the community care type work, is probably a lot less than it used to be. Now, that said, I think it's absolutely critical to maintain as much of the services as we can within the local area. But largely, I think, because of the kind of the skill sets that that keeps within within our local community. And that also the other thing, I think, you know, hospitals that are kind of hollowed out tend to be very unattractive as teaching hospitals for either junior doctors or indeed nurses. So, you know, or physios or all of those things, the allied health occupations that go along with that. So I think that's another reason we want to do that, because in a sense, if we're trying to retain some of those other types of roles within the kind of local area, we need the hospitals there and an ability there to terms of deliver teaching and training for those young staff as they're coming through. So I think it's not just the kind of current infrastructure, it's thinking about the future staffing too.
Thanks, Owen. Thanks for Clark.
Thanks, Chair, and thanks, Owen, for your presentation. Very informative, as usual. Just a question in regards to, obviously, not having an executive is a big issue for us. Even we talk about the affordability of house prices, you know, and social housing. But because of the contracts that were signed initially, a lot of these sites are not being able to be built, which is having an impact in the construction industry as well locally. I can see it in my own town, you know, we're crying out for social housing. And the builders had just left the sites, you know, because obviously everything went up, you know, approximately 30%, you know, from the tender that they put in, and there's no minister in place to give extra resources towards that. So that's having a massive impact. But even in regards to even the Green New Deal, renewables, we hear about electric charging points and who should be driving that forward, you know, without a minister driving that forward, I just find the department isn't pushing that as much as they should be. Just your experience on overall, is that typical across the north that this is happening? In regards to, you know, jobs, we need to focus on probably as a council, it is renewables. You know, it is that Green New Deal. It is that type of digital jobs. We need to be looking at, because I find in the hospitality sector and trying to fill them jobs is very different for cafes and restaurants and bars. A lot of that's to do with the high cost, you know, of housing and the low wages from hospitality. People are just better off working part time and then getting assistance, you know, with their housing benefit. You know, so it's like a chicken and egg, if you know what I mean. It's damaging the industry, but it's also putting the worker in a very hard situation, and like in regards to even social mobility and climbing, you know, they just can't get out of that sort of trap that they're in. And just a comment maybe about artificial intelligence and the impact and maybe the opportunities of AI for our region. Thanks, Owen. A bit of a ramble.
I think, I mean, in general, I think having local decision makers, be it at council level or, you know, the level of the executive, I think is critical. I think, being honest, you get into a situation of drift in the absence of that. I mean, I'm sure that the officers would thank me for saying that, but keeping people's feet to the fire, you know, even in the discipline of meetings and committee meetings and so on and so forth, I think helps a lot of things. It helps the decisions get made and then be implemented. You mentioned there's social housing, you know, part of the, you know, there's good targets there for social housing to be built, but in the absence of, you know, actually driving that as a priority, that budget will go somewhere else this year and those targets will be missed. And there's no, you know, at the end of the day, there's going to be nobody held really to account for that. So that's another year of lost building and indeed lost eating into the allocation or the waiting lists there. So I think having ministers there to make decisions or at least to decide what the priorities should be, I think is a critical one. The Green New Deal, I'd agree with you. I think one of the things that I think we've done well, and I mentioned that over in terms of employment creation over the last 25, 30 years, we've done that very, very well. There's a question, I suppose, about the, in some ways, about the kind of relative quality of a lot of the jobs that we have in terms of the wages being paid. And certainly, you know, some of the areas around renewables and Green New Deal and that, I think, do offer that opportunity to have higher, better paid jobs, higher wage jobs. There's no doubt about that. I think the one thing we shouldn't get ourselves really, if you take it at a local council level or indeed at a sort of a Northern Ireland wide or even Ireland wide thing, is that everywhere is actually looking at this now. So it's trying to think about what are the things we can do that allow things to happen more quickly. And I suppose some of the planning decisions around that in terms of, you know, the opportunities for developing onshore or offshore wind or things like that and getting our head around that, I think is going to be a critical one. And likewise, I think that kind of fits in the same way about AI. AI, you know, offers big opportunities, but it also offers enormous kind of challenges and threats in terms of jobs that you could do a certain way. We see it quite a lot in teaching now, sort of in lecturing. You know, the different. I wouldn't be able to tell the difference now between an essay that a student wrote or was written by ChatGPT. So we've tools now to try and, you know, distinguish between the two. But I have no doubt that the machine learning will be able to kind of keep ahead, if not ahead of that. So, you know, finding ways of kind of regulating AI as well as trying to develop it and have it there to help. One of the areas I think it would be critical that AI might have a role in is solving some of the issues around kind of labour shortages, because there are many labour shortages in areas that I think AI could lend itself to. But at the same time, we're going to need to, going back to that point I made earlier around upskilling people, we can't just have a situation where we're just allowing that to be a situation to lay people off. We have to find a way that the functions of people's jobs change and they're enabled to do that. So in a sense, AI isn't a destroyer of jobs, but it's an enabler, if you like, of employment.
Thanks again, Owen. Councillor Truesdale.
Thank you, Chair. Hello, Owen. Thank you very much for your presentation. I'm one of the newbies you spoke to at the top of your presentation. So please show me a bit of leniency if you've already touched on this. I wanted to ask about hospitality sector figures. I didn't see them factored in. They may well have been, but I didn't see them factored into your breakdown of sectors. In my own hometown, hospitality would be a big employer, and our employment statistics would look fabulous from June to September, but halfway through September, they would then plummet. So I was wondering, how do you base employment? Because most of those contracts will be 0 hours. So do you base it on universal credit uptake? So I was just wondering around the hospitality and 0 hours contracts feeding into the employment statistics. Secondly, just want to comment on this. Absolutely agree that CERC could play a bigger part in upskilling, especially when it comes to Green New Deal jobs, where Newcastle is ideally placed. Newcastle at Mourne is ideally placed for these Green New jobs. The CERC in Newcastle is much underutilised and really only caters for access courses. So to upskill, obviously they would have to expand on the types of courses that they're offering. Many, many of us went to CERC in Newcastle. It's been there for decades, and many of us gained our qualifications, A-levels, to enable us to go to university. But it seems to have plummeted right back down to offering access only and the odd horticulture course. So I just wanted to ask a question, make a comment. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Truesdale. So you ask a good couple of good questions there. In terms of the hospitality numbers, the council area as a whole would have a higher percentage than average in terms of employment numbers within that sector. Now, that hospitality number covers probably two main elements. One is in around the sort of hotels and accommodation end of it, and then there's the kind of food and drink, so your cafes, your bars, restaurants, that type of end of things are in the kind of that food and drink end of it. And it's usually around a split, and it'd be no different in the council area, of 70% in the food and drink end of it, in that sort of food services, and around 30% then in the accommodation and so hotels, guest houses, so on and so forth. The point you make there is around the kind of the 0 hours and indeed kind of part-time work. That's I have to say that is probably, it's the sector, is retail would be another sector where you see that most prevalent. And indeed, you know, the other kind of side to that is that if you look at the kind of annual survey of hours and earnings, those are certainly the two sectors which would have the lowest wages in them too. So in a sense, and probably, you know, the other thing, and I don't know at council level because those figures wouldn't be there, but there would be also the sectors in which you'd have greatest level of prevalence of uptake of universal credit, and indeed some of the other, you know, housing support under universal credit as well. So it's a sector, I think, that's kind of, it has a kind of challenge there in terms of offering people work year round, offering people the hours they want, and also then at the moment really trying to get people into it for those reasons. I think when COVID came along, a lot of that closed down. People went, you know, and I think any of us in the room or online will know people who kind of went into other sectors then and haven't gone back into the hospitality sector. So it is a sector with a kind of challenging reputation in terms of getting that. At the same time, I would still hold with it that it's and retail would be the same. They're brilliant as kind of entry level jobs for younger people wanting to do their first jobs, and even students at university as well, because of that kind of flexibility they offer. So it's a bit of a chicken and egg, or a bit of a there's upsides and downsides, I suppose, to it, to the hospitality numbers. In terms of the upskilling, and that is a point you ask, and it's, I'm not sure in terms of how the college offered, you know, how the colleges, both SRC and SERC, operate their different campuses. Some, I know, would concentrate more on the kind of access end and dealing with people who are economically inactive for various reasons as well. Others are kind of concentrated more on the kind of a upskilling end of things. So it may be a kind of a choice that the college makes in terms of what the kind of local demand is for courses. But overall, CERC is probably offering more upskilling opportunities across the different campuses than it would have done, say, you know, 5 or 10 years ago.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Owen. That seems to be all the questions. Can we once again thank you for your attendance tonight? Very informative, as councillors have already said, but we'll see you again, no doubt.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you, Owen. Okay, councillors, we move on to item number 5, which is the cap at Down County Museum, and Andy's going to take us through this one.
Thanks, Chair. Yes, the report is seeking approval to go out on a call for expression of interest to providers to reopen the cafe at the museum on a pilot basis later this year. So happy to take questions, Chair.
Have we a proposer? Thanks for Clark. Have we a seconder for that? Thanks for Savage. Philip, do you want to make a comment?
Yes, thanks, Chair. I just welcome that there's the opportunity now that the cafe and museum is getting back to the operational standards. It's good to see that happening. It's good to see it's going to be an opportunity for a local business in the area to branch out. I just have a question for Andy, if it's okay.
Go ahead.
I'm aware that the museum at the moment is being used for workshops for the Arts Centre. I just want to clarify if those guys will be, who are using that workshop space, will they be displaced, or will they be moving towards making the Arts Centre more operational? Because as you're aware, it's not open on a Saturday. So just wondering, you know, is there a long-term plan to have the Arts Centre more operational on Saturday afternoon with this cafe winning the space? 16
to 20.
Through the chair, yes, that's something that we can look at in terms of the operational space within the Arts Centre, or if there's other space you know, outside of the arts centre that can be used for groups, then that's something very happy to look at that and come back on that. But in terms of the cafe provision, we'll be looking at running it on a pilot basis to see what could work best for all stakeholders, really. We put the expression of interest out and then we can bring updates back to members. It'll be simply on a trial basis to see, or a pilot basis, to see what the market response is, I suppose.
Okay, thanks, Andy.
Okay, folks, Harry's in there as well. Harry, go ahead.
Thanks, Kirk. Very happy to support the recommendations outlined in Section 3 of the paper that the Council proceeds to issue an expression of interest to get this popular facility at the museum and down Patrick fully operational once more. And I used to be a frequent visitor there and seen it firsthand how so many patrons enjoyed the facility. So happy to support and I look forward to it opening again.
Thanks, Sir Bowsey.
Thank you. Just to lend the support for that. It's a great asset, the museum, and it's important to encourage people to come along. So the cafe will certainly help. Be nice to see a charity take it on again, but I'll understand it has to be a viable business. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, councillors. The following items will be taken in closed session. Item 69. Items 69 are deemed to be exempt under paragraph 3 of part 1 of Schedule 6 of the Local Government Act 2014. Information relating to the financial or business affairs of any particular person, including the council holding that information on the public, may be a resolution be excluded during these items of business. Can I have a proposer to go into closed session? Mr. Anders, have I a seconder? Yeah. Well, Councillor King second that. Okay, then move to just give. Our nation speech starting soon.
Okay, Linda.
Yes, the press back in and recording started.
Thank you.
Okay, the following was agreed in closed session. Item 6, campsite security, on the proposal of Councillor Tinley, seconded by Councillor Savage, it was agreed to approve and to procure and appoint a suitably qualified and experienced contractor to supply and manage certified security personnel at council managed campsites for a period of 3 years, 24 to 26, subject to annual budget approvals. Item 7, street trading policies, on the proposal of Councillor Campbell and seconded by Councillor Kearns, it was agreed to approve street trading policies as set out in section 2.1 of the report and to improve the amendment to item 6.13 of the statutory licence policy as set out in section 2.2 of the report. Item 8, trading pitches at council tourism facilities, on the proposal of Councillor Andrews, seconded by Councillor Kearns, it was agreed to approve to issue competitive tender process for the purpose of appointing suitably qualified and experienced operators to the tourism facility trading pitches. Item 9, Warren Pike Public Realm Scheme, on the proposal of Councillor Rowan, seconded by Councillor Clark, it was agreed to approve the outline business case to deliver the Warren Pike Front Shore Car Parks Public Realm Scheme and accept the Department for Communities letter of offer to follow. It was also agreed to improve all consultant and contractor procurements required to progress the Warren Pike Front Shore Car Parks Public Realm Scheme. That's those items. The rest of the items on the agenda are for noting only. So, got to thank everyone for. Oh, sorry, a proposer and a seconder for that.
That's the noted items.
The noted items. Yeah, proposed Councillor Savage, seconded Councillor Kearns. That is it, folks. Thanks everyone for the meeting.